Welcome back to Campbell Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today is episode 232 of the podcast, and I'm joined in conversation by Ian Cognac. Ian is a sales coach who's helped B2B account executives perform to their full potential by mastering their mindset, their habits, and their selling skills. And he is somebody that has walked the walk. As the former number one enterprise account executive at Salesforce globally, Ian teaches you exactly what works and what helped him achieve massive success. He's sold over 100 million across his career, hit quota and target 16 out of 19 years, and broken seven figures three times. This conversation is, of course, packed with sales insights, but there's an awful lot more to it. You can expect to learn about happiness, overcoming addiction, and getting on the path to recovery, mastering the psychology of your own mind and your customers, and having hard conversations. Alongside this, you're going to understand a lot more about what enabled Ian to grow his coaching business at an exponential rate since retiring from his sales career. The numbers are simply staggering. The impact has been significant, and the process is something I think all of us who have desires or ambition to scale our own businesses and the revenue streams that we have, we can learn from it. And I'm excited to share this conversation with you. Before we dive into the episode, please make sure you have hit subscribe, whatever platform you're listening on. And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave a five-star rating. We have just blasted past 400 five-star ratings on Spotify, and it really does help as the show continues to grow into the top 1% globally. I did say last thing, but the very, very last thing, if you have ambitions to start a podcast and host amazing guests like Ian and grow your personal brand, your network, and your business, then I've built a learning platform just for you called My Podcast Masterclass. It is a 54-video course that you can go through to get started, to start your podcast, scale it, and sustain it, and really grow in a direction that you want to grow in. It'll be linked in the show notes, mypodcastmasterclass.thinkific.com. But as I said, that's enough from me. You have almost an hour and a half of myself and Ian right after the music plays. Ian, welcome to the show. I think we're speaking an exciting time for both of us. You're on such a good energy and a vibe today. I feel like we're going to have a great chat.
I had a great vibe. This morning I worked out. I set some personal records at the gym with my trainer, and then I didn't feel like it, but I hopped in the cold shower afterwards. And any time I hop in a cold shower, it wakes me up. So you're literally coming. It's your afternoon. It's my morning, but you're coming at my peak. We're recording this at my peak physiological and mental time of the day, for sure.
Sharp and ready. So with that in mind, I want to start with a quote from yourself about happiness. And you said, happiness is the joy I feel in pursuit of my full potential. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
It means that the joy is in the journey. You know, people think that happiness is a destination. There's a great TED talk that I was just talking about yesterday in my course. It's by a guy named Sean Aker. And Sean Aker has a TED talk called The Happiness Advantage. He has a book of the same name, and it studies people that are happy, and people that are happy have significantly more success in the workplace. They have more productivity. They have more results, better results, more creativity, more engagement with their peers, colleagues, and customers. So when I think about happiness, I think about, it's not a destination. It's the way you show up every day. And the main thesis of the book is that success follows happiness, not the other way around. In other words, if you're waiting to be happy until you get success, you're going to be waiting your whole life, because success is a moving target. So for me, when I say happiness is the joy I feel in the pursuit of my full potential, what I'm talking about is the word potential is unlimited, right? We have unlimited potential. We're only using a relatively small portion of our brain. So let's say, for example, I am in sales, like a lot of people here, and I want to be a $1 million earner. That's probably about the cap you're going to get as a W-2 employee for a salesperson. You know, I know very few people that make $1 million year after year after year, every year, because quotas go up, territories get smaller, companies change, leadership changes. So it's just something that's not necessarily sustainable forever. So you reach that point, you say, I've reached the pinnacle, now what? Well, if it's only downhill or flat from there, you're tapped out. So what do you do from there? Well, maybe you said, well, I'm done with sales. I want to have my own business. And now the bar gets raised completely higher, where $1 million, if you're $1 million company, you're a very small business. But if you're a $10 million company, now we're talking. If you're $100 million, there's a whole nother level. So the potential now becomes not, hey, as an individual, how do I build a company, right? And that's just in the career business side. When we talk about potential, we talk also about the human potential, health. Maybe I want to run marathons. Oh, I do that. Well, now it's on to ultras or triathlons. Okay, great. What next? Is it same thing as a parent? How can I be the best parent and be patient and kind and peaceful? Potential in your faith, potential in your marriage. So the joy I feel in the pursuit of my full potential is this concept of constantly taking an inventory of yourself and seeing where can I get better? Where can I do better? And when you reach a certain area, inevitably there's going to be other areas that need attention. So for me, it's just, that is life. And that's going to be till the day I die. My pursuit is how can I be the best version of myself in all areas of life? And honestly, that's for me, something I can get excited about the rest of my life.
Having that level of excitement for continuous progress is something that is naturally hardwired into us, but many people don't recognize that. They sometimes think, as you said, hit a particular goal and the feet go up and they think that's that. But you see so many people that maybe exit from a successful business or they hit a particular milestone in their career and they fall into like a period of not even depression, but just an element of losslessness. And like there's a thing called gold medal syndrome. A lot of athletes who maybe win the gold at the Olympics, the next 2-3 years, if they're not competing in the next Olympics, completely lost. And that happens so often with the level of success that you see some people achieve within business or within sales. And it's really easy to not understand that you actually have to get back on the horse. And even if it's in a different arena, give yourself some sort of fulfillment or something to chase towards. And one of the things I want to understand in your own journey, Ian, is what was the kind of the first time that you started to notice that you had potential within the sales world? Because there must have been moments when you recognized, okay, I'm going to be good within this space.
Well, I posted about this yesterday on LinkedIn, but you know, I worked in sales, pure corporate sales, tech sales for 18 years before I retired and started my own company, which is the journey I'm on now. But from a sales perspective, my first 14 years of sales, I was making around between 200 and 250K, which in US dollars sounds really good. That's probably the top 10% of earners. And you know, a lot of people would be extremely comfortable and extremely happy at that level. Well, I wasn't, because making 200K at a company like Salesforce.com in the enterprise space is actually below average when the OTEs are around 250 to 300. So if you do the math, I actually was scraping and clawing maybe to hit plan and was missing it in other times. That's when it really, really kind of hit me. Before Salesforce, I worked for 10 years at a company called Ricoh, and I was the top dog. Globally, I had a sales team. I had 70 people working for me. I rose the ranks and, you know, was very successful. And, you know, it kind of goes to that theme we're talking about. I realized I was playing in the wrong sport. Ricoh was selling copiers and printers, and printing and paper was on the down. And I was just in the wrong industry. So I saw Salesforce. And then I became, instead of being a big fish in a small pond, I became a small fish in a big pond. And I really kind of was struggling for the 4 years. So again, between my first 10 years at Ricoh, my next 4 years at Salesforce, that's 14 years of my career. I was hovering in this pretty comfortable level, but not really crossing that chasm of like top elite earner, elite performer. Because at Salesforce, there were people making over $1 million per year. Okay, that was the world I was in. And it took me missing my quota 3 years in a row at Salesforce. And the last year was on the very last day of the fiscal year is when I missed it. I missed it by one deal, okay? And I remember thinking to myself, this was my rock bottom. Unfortunately, I've had to hit a lot of rock bottoms in my life to kind of wake up. But in the sales moment, I remember the exact moment. It was January 31st of 2017. So we're talking now, you know, 7 years ago. But in that moment, it was the last day of our fiscal. I missed my deal by 1 year. And I screamed at the top of my lungs and I said, never again. And that was when it hit me that I was average. I was mediocre. And I wasn't put on this earth to be an average person. And that was like when I just was humbled after failing 3 years in a row enough to realize that what had gotten me that far was not going to get me to the next level. So that was when I realized I wasn't performing to my full potential and that I needed help. And that kind of started me on this journey of personal development. And that's when I really, again, I've been deep in personal development now for 7 years and everything has shifted, everything. But that was the catalyst for me to say, I'm not at my potential. There are other people who are running circles around me. How do I get to that next level? And that's when I, again, started investing myself heavily, and I've never looked back since that day.
There often needs to be moments of such pain that force you to change path. There's a lot of talk at the moment of like being comfortably numb. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you had just been scraping your sales target and quota in the first 3 years at Salesforce, you might have just carried on the way that you were. But by failing in consecutive years, something that you weren't used to in your previous role at Rico, it was hurting. It was hurting. It was jabbing away.
Yeah. Here's what happened. Here's why it was so painful, right? Is because I was blaming outside forces my first 2 years of missing quota. I have a bad manager. I have a bad territory. I'm in the enterprise space. You know, I'm a grinder. I'm a transactional guy. I can't do enterprise. I'm just in the wrong role. And I literally made every effort to put myself in a good position. So after those 2 years failing, the first 2 years, I changed teams. I downgraded myself from an enterprise rep to a commercial rep. So I actually went down and got a demotion so I could have more accounts. And I ended up going to this great team with this amazing manager and had great accounts and had everything I asked for. And then I miss it still by one deal. And that was exponentially more painful than the two previous years where I missed it big time, because I now had to face myself and say, hey, everything you thought was the reason you couldn't succeed, you fixed and you still fail. And so that was really the come to Jesus for me, was this idea that like, it wasn't about the external situation. It was actually me was the reason that I was failing. It was taking ownership of my results.
It's vital to realize that. And so many people that I've interviewed over the last 3-4 years recognize those turning point moments and start to think about what are the actions they took thereafter that really moved them in the right direction. So I know from your story, some of the investments you made from a personal development perspective were not immediate returns, but quite quick returns to show you that what you've been doing previously was, as you said, transactional, wheeler, dealer, that kind of type of guy that would succeed in a particular environment. But where you'd moved to, you needed to evolve, adapt, or die.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. It was like, I was a grinder. I was a hard worker. I was a let's get it done, ready, fire, aim guy. And when you're dealing with selling software and you're selling to executives in pretty big companies, that approach doesn't work. They want partners. They want thought leaders. They want people who are collaborative, who are not trying to, you know, slam deals. And so, you know, in copiers, that worked great, right? But when it came to, you know, strategic selling, it's a totally different type of person who thrives in that environment. I don't know if you know Jamal Raymer or Brandon Fluharty or any of these guys on LinkedIn that are, you know, the $1 million club of these software reps that are making, you know, selling these huge deals. But the nature and the personality and the energy of these folks that are really crushing it is the exact opposite of what you think of when you think salesperson. Or, you know, I'm what you think of, like high energy, you know, let's go, personable, let's throw it down or whatever. And that's not what was going to get me to that next level. And so I needed to actually get out of my own way and change everything about myself if I was going to really succeed. So I made this big shift, and we can talk about it if you want, but it was all about me up until that point. And really what I needed to do was make it about other people. So I had to make the shift from an inward focus to an outward focus. And once I did that, my results, I mean, every year after I made club and my income tripled. So it was a massive success.
That's one of my favorite pieces of content you've got on YouTube, that shift from inward to outward. Mm-hmm. And some of the terminology you were using there around the type of salespeople that from a strategic perspective do well, the term that I always use is trusted advisor. I want them to view me as somebody that they can ask a question about my industry or my sector and believe I'm an expert and I'm going to be able to deliver that. Even if it's not directly related to my product or service, I should have a wider knowledge of what's going on within the market so that they feel right. Like this calling guy knows his stuff.
That's actually right. And when I coach people, I get a lot of people who are new in a role. And they're like, what should I do my first 30 days or 60 days? I'm like, become an expert. Literally, don't worry about prospecting. Don't worry about reaching out. You need to understand deeply the problems you solve, how you solve them. Understand the deals that you've done, that your company's won. Go talk to the reps. Find out, who is the customer? Why did they buy from you? What specifically were the challenges they were struggling with? What are the results they got from that? Like literally learn the stories inside and out of your best customers. get copies of the proposals and the decks from the top rep to see what that story looks like and how it was presented. Interview, you know, these folks, take them out to lunch, buy them a gift card to Marriott, go do something to get on their radar and model what they're doing. Because, you know, you can try and figure it out, or you can model and learn what already works and follow a proven path. So again, it's all about understanding the problems you solve, understand what the world looks like, and being able to speak the language of the people you're going after. And you can't fake that. You really do need to study and research. So it's just a different set of skills. And unfortunately, in companies right now, what do you get when you start a new company? And what happens? What do they teach on? Product?
Yeah, selling.
They teach on product and they teach on process. Here's our methodology. Here's our systems. Here's our products. It's not about the customer and where the customer is challenged with and what problems the customer has. And here's how to talk to the customers. And here's who we target. And here's why they buy. It's all broken right now. So, you know, I've been the benefactor of that because I teach this stuff and I have a lot of, you know, people come to me. But unfortunately, it's like get out in the field, go make it happen, go swim with the sharks, figure it out. And that just is not effective. You're going to waste a lot of time. You might not even last the 6 months to be able to learn because you have a manager that's so short-sighted and transactional that you're actually not going to be that trusted advisor you talk about. So it's really, again, it's about learning their business and putting yourself in the seat of the customer and really being a student of the problems they have so you can speak their language and then earn their trust, at which point then you could start to talk about your solutions.
For sure. And I think that's the crux of the whole inward versus outward piece. And I'd love for us to go in a little bit deeper into some of the things that actually means in terms of personality traits and characteristics that need to shift in the right direction.
Yeah, I think the first thing is a quote that comes to mind from Zig Ziglar, right? And he said, you can have all the success, I'm going to butcher it, but help as many people get what they want, and then you can get what you want. So that sums up what inward to outward means in its simplest form, is if you are interested in somebody else, like you're asking me questions, you're thoughtful. The fact you're putting this interview at an hour and a half versus 30 minutes or an hour is different than 90% of podcasts I go on. It shows you're really interested and to dive deep, you're going to want more time with your guests. So again, fundamentally, be interested, not interesting. So what the shift from inward to outward means is if you can really be interested in understanding what your prospect wants most, what does success look like for them? What are their top priorities and goals for this particular year, this year? What are the biggest challenges right now that they're faced with that are preventing them from hitting these goals? And really get good at having conversations about other people. You don't need to talk about product or yourself at all. And what they're going to do is they're going to lean in because everyone loves to talk about themselves. And a lot of people, they show up and they throw up. They come in, they talk about, they do a pitch, they talk about the product, they demo right away. I said, never give away a fucking demo. Never give away a demo, okay? Only time I demo is that when I know I can help someone. The only way I can know I can help is if I see their environment, if I understand their process, if I have a conversation, if I have an executive. So I won't demo until, you know, third, fourth, fifth meeting, right? Because I need to make sure it's a fit before I waste your time showing a bunch of stuff that may or may not be relevant. So this is something that...
This is huge, Ian. You're completely correct, because also, just while we're on the demo topic, you also can shape your demo in a way that ticks their boxes. Right. And one of the things that I've always done in my sales career since I've been trained to do it is writing down some of the terminology about they've said about their pain points of their process. And when I present my demo or my product, whatever it is, I'm using the same words that they used about the process. So if for example, when I worked in the insurance world, they're talking about, confusion about documentation or whatever else, I'll be like, this provides clarity to the confusion about the documentation you had with your other broker, whatever it was, because you've listened and then you feed that back to them and they feel heard and feel seen. Yeah. And you mentioned there, everyone's favorite topic is themselves. They also really appreciate if they feel like when they said something that mattered to them from their chest, you were like, noted, I heard that and I'm going to help you with
it. Exactly. And you're taking notes. And again, it's one of those things that I've taken this ethos or philosophy to my coaching business. I genuinely want to understand why people are working with me. The first thing I do with everyone who comes on is I do an onboarding call and they fill out a detailed intake form and all their challenges and all their goals and the personal life and their health and their business and their sales And I set up a 30-minute call with them, and I make sure I understand what are their top three or four outcomes that they want to achieve from coaching. Now, the next 12 private sessions we have together, I already have a framework of where we're going to focus and what we're going to go deep on. And maybe it's their mindset, or maybe it's their time management, or their habits, or maybe it's their skills. But every single coaching call, if you were to record 100 calls that I do, everyone looks, feels, and sounds different because it's all tailored to them. That's how your demo should feel. It should feel like it's unique and only available to your customer. That's how they feel seen and heard. And honestly, it's like, that's just one aspect of it. It really is about helping them get what they want. So it's like, these are the outcomes you want. So let's say you're selling to a head of sales. The outcomes they want could be, I want to grow revenue by 20%, or I want to have everyone on my team hit quota. Or it could be, I want to onboard and train people so they feel equipped to, you know, be successful. It's going to be similar across a variety of personas if you're selling to the same group or same industry. And once you've done a few, you're going to hear the same patterns. But you got to give people a chance to tell you exactly what success means to them. And a lot of times, no sales reps are even asking. It seems so darn basic to me to find out, what is your role? What are you measured on? How are you tracking? What's getting in the way? And if I can help you achieve your goals, then great. Let's discuss what that looks like. If I can't, it's all good. Let's move on. So it's like this genuine caring of helping other people. And that, when I crossed that chasm, I was only concerned about my quota. I was only concerned with making about a lot of money. And yeah, money's good. Believe me, my lifestyle is really, really expensive. And I support my family, and I have multiple homes, and I have a very high standard of living right now. But that is not, and I repeat, that is not my goal, is not to make the money to support my lifestyle and continue to get rich. That is an outcome of making other people successful in their lifestyle. So the more people I can help make a lot of money and be successful in sales and actually do it the right way without sacrificing their health and their relationships and their, you know, all the mistakes I made in the process of being successful, and there's a lot of those, the more success I will have. And that is the principle for any salesperson, is make your clients and prospects successful. And to do that, you really need to understand what success looks like for them, where their challenges are. And if you can help, great. And if you can't, on to the next. There's plenty of other people who will want and need your help, because you do not want to work with people who are not committed to the process of actually giving you the data you need, the access you need, the information you need to build a business case, to customize your demo like we talked about. So it's not a push, it's a pull. It's a pull. You pull the right people in and you work with them and you give your all to make them successful with your team, your resources, your engineers, your architects, your business value, whatever resources you have. I said, I'm going to work my ass off for you, but I got to make sure you're committed. So let's have this conversation up front.
When you shifted from this inward to outward focus, mm-hmm. what were the biggest things that you noticed changed about your results?
Well, I went from an average of around 1.3 million ACV ARR per year to an average of 3.9. So just the sheer tripling of my results was one, which led to my average income going from around, again, $2,000 to $250,000, right? In my first 4 years in Salesforce, about $240,000 to $720,000. So my ACV tripled. My income tripled my last 4 years, and my joy of service, like the joy of the job, it wasn't such a grind. It wasn't so painful because I was pushing and pushing. I felt like a nasty, slimy, icky salesperson when I was making about me. And there's a term I use, and I've heard, I didn't make it up, but I heard it before me and I love it. It's called commission breath. And it stinks. It's like when you show up and it's all about you and closing your deal, and you got to do this by the end of the quarter. And like, everyone does that. And that's just the sales. That's why salespeople have a bad rap. But my commission breath went away. And my deals started closing earlier in the fiscal. They didn't wait till January. And that year that I missed it by one deal, the last day of the fiscal, I said, never again. I'm never going to be in a position again where I'm waiting the last day of the year to, you know, to hit quota. And fortunately, I wasn't. I made club every year after that, and all of it happened before the last day of the fiscal. So I wasn't in that stressful position. So my job became less stressful. I actually felt more rewarded because I was helping people achieve some really big goals, and it was about them and not me. And obviously my income and my, you know, my stance on the leaderboard, you know, shot up. I ended up finishing number one at Salesforce the year that I started personal development and globally, and that was in the enterprise space. And then the year after that, I finished number four. So I was like got flown out to Monaco, got to meet with our CEO, got all these prizes. I mean, it just like everything, my lifestyle, and I was able to buy a house that was in our desired school district and with our kids. And it's like, it's never
it unlocked everything you
Everything I ever wanted, I had. That's why I say, help people get what they want. You're going to get what you want. And it's just been, honestly, it's been that way for 7 years now. And it's now it's getting to a level that is beyond my wildest dreams, way more as a business owner than ever was possible as a salesperson.
I love the term commission breath. I've used it before in training that I've delivered as sales breath. And the way that I bring it to life for anyone that's taking part or listening to this would be, if you've been in like a car showroom, you get the guy that's all over you like a rash, just desperately trying to close you. And you can feel that it means so much to him and it links to desperation. And that's a really unattractive quality in any dynamic, whether that's in a relationship, whether that's in a sales transaction. You don't want to deal with somebody who's desperate, who's clingy, whose contacts with you aren't of value. And that's why when it comes to sales, you want to be adding value or moving a process forward rather than just checking in or just being a little bit sleazy or creepy. And I love that as soon as you shifted your focus, you were able to detach that feeling of scarcity and come from a place where I'm trying to help, I'm trying to make a difference to you. If it's not right for you, I'll move on. And there's a big, big, big benefit to having an abundant mindset in so many different areas because you're able to say no to the thing that's not right rather than trying to squeeze and contort into a way that's just never, ever really going to fill
you. Totally. And you said the word detach, and that was what I was thinking as you were talking. It's like, you got to detach from the outcome, period, and attach to your effort and your intention. If your intention is good and your effort is all you can do, you've already won. So that for me is everything. It's like, I don't need you. Okay. I'm here to help. And if you don't want my help or my team's help, it's all good. And people feel that. And it's like, they want to work with you. They pull you in versus you pushing yourself on them. It's really about, again, not caring whether or not someone does business with you. Of course you want people to do business, but I don't want somebody, I'll give you an example. Like I'll genuinely, this just happened to me yesterday or the day before. I had a client and he's going through some financial challenges. He's been with me for a year and he's doing great, but he was over leveraged. He had real estate and he had a lot of, he didn't have necessarily the cash flow he wanted because he had his hands in so many different places. He was running an Airbnb and developing real estate and trying to work in his company. And he basically came to me about 3-4 months ago and he said, Ian, I want to keep working with you, but I don't have the cash flow to pay $18,000 up front, which is what I charge because he had put all of his money in other areas. And he was getting great results. He was actually really successful in the program. So he wanted to renew, but he took the money that he was making and he pushed it towards these other investments. So he didn't actually have the free cash. And I said, okay, no worries. He's like, can we do this? Can we go on a monthly plan, a payment plan? And then I'll pay off the rest of it in April 1st when I get my tax back from all these, you know, side investments because I put everything there and, you know, I need to wait till April 1st. And can I do it with no interest? In other words, can I pay you monthly for 4 months and then get the annual rate because I charge a higher rate for monthly clients than those who pay in full, obviously. And so he calls me 2 days ago and we're on this monthly plan and his credit card is getting declined. And I run an online business. And after 4 times of decline, the access to the program gets shut off by Stripe. It's not even me. It's just the way that Kajabi works, the platform that I'm using for my online courses. So it turned off access. And he's like, can we talk? I'm like, sure. So I get on the phone with him. He's like, well, I want to change plans again. And keep in mind, I created this custom no interest monthly switching to annual plan for him. And I'm like, no. Like, we already did this. And he's like, what do you mean? I've been with you. I want to work with you. I'm like, it's not about that. We agreed on a custom plan for you and you're not keeping your word. And then I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm sounding like kind of a dick right now. Like, and then I said, brother, I love you and I want to work with you. Okay. Just tell me what you need. And I literally stopped myself in my business mind. And he's like, Ian, I can't pay for this until April. I'm like, so what would be good for you? He's like, I made 2 payments already. Okay. I owe this much and I'll have this money in April. I'm like, when? He said, April 1st. I'm like, okay. So why don't we do this? Why don't we pause your membership? You don't need to pay anything until now. If cash is tight, I don't want you to not have it. In April 1st, you can pay the remaining balance for the annual thing like we talked about. Is that okay? He's like, yeah. I'm like, are you sure you can do it April 1st? Like, well, maybe April 15th. I'm like, okay. So that's what we're doing. And I just say this as an example because it was about detaching from whether or not he stayed with me. It was like, I could have held this. You have to pay the contract. You signed it up. I even gave him an out. I said, if you don't want to coach with me, if you can't pay for it, it's all good. Like, and he's like, no, I do. I want to. It's just the cash. And so this idea of like being rigid and forcing the hand, even fundamentally with someone who broke their word, who did not actually honor what they said. And if he's listening, I'm sorry, I'm not meaning to use you as an example for this, but this is my thought process through it. I wanted to help him. And I said, brother, I genuinely love you. And he's a Christian like me. He overcame an addiction that's similar to mine. And I want to help him with his life and his family. And that came first. It really did. And so we paused it. I'm not collecting anything. I gave him the annual, stopped his membership for 3 months, not seeing anything. And I gave him something, a second flexible new option that's going to work for him. And that's what it's all about. That's what outward focus is. It's about if he wants to stay with me or not, that's his choice. I'm not going to force it. I want to help him. And he saw that intention. And it was like, he wants to keep working with me. So my clients, even though they're paying a huge amount of money, are renewing at a rate that's higher than ever because they are getting results. And if they don't renew, that's fine. I don't care. I genuinely don't care. It's for them. If they're good.
You're detached from it. You're able to say, it's fine. Somebody else can leave because I'll go and acquire somebody else and I'll bring them into the program and they'll get value and they'll get results as well. And equally, somebody might change industry or change tact or feel like I've learned as much as I need from Ian just now. I'm going to take some time away from it, whatever else. And you're open to that opportunity. And I think that also, it probably draws more people towards you because they don't feel that like it's a lifetime it's commitment to be coached by
There's
you.
There's no pressure. I don't want people who don't want to work with me. This is what you need to understand. If you want to be the 1% in sales, if you want to make $500,000 to $1 million or more in sales, or as a business owner, you need to understand this concept. In this principle is don't try to bring clients in, okay? Instead of you pushing your services or products and trying to convince them to buy, right? Have them convince you why they need your help. It's all about understanding and assessing, does this client need my help? And if you know you can help them, then boom, it's on, game on. I'm gonna call your ass out. I'm gonna put you on the spot. And I'm going to say, you just told me every reason why you need my help. Help me understand what's holding you back right now and have a real conversation with them. I don't mind hard closing. I don't mind pressure, but only when I know that I can help them and that they're getting in their own way, in which case I'm going to call their ass out on it. So again, fundamentally, it's this idea that you need or your business will grow when you have clients that want to work with you. And if they're not interested in working with you, or if they don't need your help, your job in sales is to determine, does this client need my help or not? Okay. And once you know they need your help, then your job is to get them to enroll and show them how you can help them and earn their trust in showing them that this is going to work for them, right? By showing them what the path is, what the plan is, giving them references, helping them talk to, like, whatever that you're going to do to make them comfortable, that's what you need to do. But only do you do that when you know for a fact you can help people. So I spend all the time up front really assessing, is this person, whether it's a business or an individual, somebody that I can help? And once it's a yes, then game on. And that's how you close. Again, a lot of people close at 20, 30% of deals. The elite sales performers are closing over 70% of the deals because their sales cycles with the right people that they know they can help and that are engaged in the process. And I think that
they've heavily filtered. I completely agree. What are some of those questions that somebody might be able to ask to really understand if they can help the client that they're speaking
to? Depends
what
your industry is. It depends what you're selling. It's going to be different for every single person. So for me, if I'm coaching somebody and I'm out on a call with them, I'm going to say on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel in terms of do you feel like you're performing to your full potential? on a scale of 1 to 10. And if they say 7, say, well, tell me why. And then they just get them to tell you where they struggle. Where are your biggest struggles? Where do you think you get in your own way? What's your income target? What's your OT? What are the top people making in your company? So if I know someone's making 200,000, but people at their company are making 700,000, right? Why do you think you're not able to do it? What do you think is holding you back? Where are your biggest challenges? What's your win rate? So it's like you have to understand the metrics that you can impact and then ask them about those metrics and then ask them why. What do you think is actually holding you back? What are the biggest challenges you're facing it with? Why aren't you performing to your full potential? And in this example, again, I'm just using my coaching business. They're going to say, well, I don't work a full day, or I get distracted too easily, or I feel overwhelmed, or I procrastinate, or maybe they'll say, like, I don't have the strategic selling skills. I was good at transactional, but I don't know how to get into big companies and enterprises. They'll open up, and then it's like, great. And if I have content in my course, or if I have tools that I can give them and frameworks, then I can talk about those and tell them, hey, here's what I'd recommend and here's how I'm going to help you. So that's the missing link. So once you know you can help, then you need to show them how you would approach helping them. You need to give them a plan. You need to show them, hey, you've come to the right place. So it's the both parts. It's equal part qualifying. And then it's like, okay, here's how we would approach this, so they feel comfortable that, you know, that you actually can help them.
One of the vital things you've explained there, Ian, is that you're asking about where they're at, what they want to get to, what they care about, what's holding them back. But you're also digging deeper as you go, because you were saying there they might say, like, oh, I'm not being able to work a full day, I'm procrastinating. Understanding why that might be and kind of digging into that is a vital next step, because then you can really join it to one of your solutions or one of your courses or whatever it is that solves that pain point. Because once you delve deeper into that, and it's not just surface level, like, I'm just not hitting my target. Okay, why? Oh, I'm struggling to, like you say, concentrate for a full day. My work ethic drops off on a Friday, whatever it is. Okay, why do you think that is? And they might not know immediately, but there'll be things that are pointing towards the factor that's limiting them. And that's where you can really start to scrape beneath the skin and start to heal it. More so if it's just on a very surface level basis. But be willing to ask the second question. As a podcaster, one of the most important things I do is ask the initial question and ask a follow-up once I've listened to what's been said, rather than just ask the next question I want to based on the topics I want to cover.
So let's talk about this for a minute, because you're doing it right now, Colin. You're doing it really well because you're digging, okay? So for anyone who's wants to learn how to improve active listening and conversational skills, I would highly recommend the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen Covey. So he has a whole chapter on active listening. And to define active listening, it is listening with the intent of understanding, not replying. Okay, so if you're listening to someone and you're thinking about what you're going to say or how you're going to respond, by the very nature of that, your headspace is already full. You can't dig because you want to get your word in. That's commission breath. Even if you don't know and it's not, you're not deliberately doing it, you are actually trying to be validated. Hey, I can help. Listen. So people say, I have a problem. He's like, here's the solution. No. When someone says they have a problem, well, why is it a problem? How's the problem impacting you? How long has the problem gone on for? Have you ever tried to fix it? Why are you trying to fix it now? I just asked 5 questions that probably would take that one problem and make it from a one single answer question to a 15-minute discussion to really understand. And that was just on one problem. You could do that for all the problems. So you end up spending 60, 70, 80% of the time talking about them. And then at the very end of the meeting, then you talk about, okay, here's how I'd approach your challenges. So you're doing it right now. But again, I want to hold what I do when I'm really like gung-ho to like remember to say something and I have a thought, I'll just keep a piece of paper next to me and I'll just literally write it down like one bullet or one word so I don't forget. I'm fine. We'll get there later, but at least I can get to that later. But it's really about trying to understand what they're saying, understand why, you know, why they're saying it and why now. It really, there's 3 questions you need to answer as a salesperson for any opportunity. Number one is, why do you need to change what you're doing, right? Why do you need to change what you're doing? Because if you're selling anything, it's going to be a change for them, whether it's a coaching program that they're going to have to start attending and start adopting, or whether it's selling Salesforce, where they're going to have to rip out their existing technology and retrain their sales team, right? It's a big effort. Change is a big effort. So why do you need to change what you're doing? Or before you even ask you why do you need to change, what are you doing? Just understanding what they're doing today, what their current state is, and what the impact of that. And then you get into the change conversation. Well, why do you need to change? Okay, what you're doing, what's driving you to change? Is it a priority that your executives have? Is it, you know, you're missing your goals? Is it you're going to lose your job? Whatever it is, it's going to be different for every person. So why do they need to change? Second question, why now, right? Why now? What's driving this timeline right now? Because if it's gone on for 5 years, so what? Keep going on for 10 years, right? So why now? And then the final question is why you? Why is your company uniquely positioned to help them with that change? So if you can say, here's why they need to change, here's why they need to change right now, and here's why we are the only ones that can help them, your sale is going to close. And there's one missing critical ingredient. You need to be talking to the right person or people. You have to be talking to people who feel the pain of why they're trying to change. You got to talk to the people who are impacted by that, not by the people who are taking orders. You got to talk to the people giving the orders. That is, if I take 50 different variables of what leads to a sale, that one variable outweighs all 49 combined. That one variable of talking to power, talking to people who actually can sign off or influence change or make things happen in the organization is so much more important than anything else. Anything else, because someone can want
it's,
to say
it's vitally. I've wasted so much time in my younger days as a salesperson speaking to the wrong level when it's so much easier to get sponsored down, is the term that I use. Right. So start at the top and go the way down, because it might be that the operations director is in charge of this project, but guess who's signing off? The CFO. So best believe you need to have them linked in from the very start and buying into you as part of the process as well, rather than the proposal landing on their desk before they sign off and having this painful discussion where you now need to repitch or have somebody do it internally for you that's never going to deliver it in the same way that you're going to do it in terms of that kind of final conversation. So I completely agree. Start at the right level and you quite quickly understand what the process for sign off is going to be. I always like to have complete clarity and little questions that don't delegitimize the person that you're speaking to at the moment, but little questions like, is anyone else need to be involved in this conversation at this time? Does anyone else need to join this meeting so that we've got full sight for you internally of what we're going to move forward with? And it's not a case of, does your boss need to be here? Because that's a horrible question.
I think that's really important. So people, humans are human. Just because they don't have a title doesn't mean they're not important, doesn't mean their opinion or their thoughts don't matter. So it's like, you've got to treat people as if they're the decision maker. And just by that intention of not like, what's the word? Talking down to people because they're a low title or a manager. When I'm talking to, let's say I have a sales enablement manager that's talking to me, I know that sales enablement manager at a company is not going to buy my services, right? They can't. They don't have the budget or the authority to buy them. The people that buy training at my level are CROs, right? Plain and simple. They're the heads of sales or the CFO, right? Or the CEO, typically. And those are the people I need to talk to. Right. But that doesn't mean the sales enablement manager is useless. So if I understand how they're training the team today, where their team's struggling, what they're doing, you know, why they're talking to me, like all that stuff is just fuel to have the conversation with their senior executive. So I take whatever I can from that role. And at the end of that call, I'll say, great. Well, it sounds like a great fit. What's the process look like in terms of actually getting a training program approved? Who needs to be involved? Who's ultimately going to sign off on this? They're going to be way more willing and receptive to answer those questions if you treat them like a human and if you have the conversation as if they are the decision maker first versus starting out, why isn't your boss here or who needs to be involved? Like, you don't start with those questions. You start with understanding if they need help first and then, okay, clearly you're a good fit. What's the process look like? Who do we need to get involved? Who's the sign-off? And they're going to want to bring you in. And you say, hey, great. Given that they have to sign off, here's another really important thing, okay? If you get this internal person trying to sell up, what's called bottom-up selling, where they're selling it on your behalf, they are competing with other priorities that this executive who probably has 10 people like them reporting and asking for money for their projects, their stuff is competing with that. Where if you're meeting with the executive, now you can align what you're selling to the executive's priorities. So the top-down selling is everything. And I call it yo-yo selling. I say start high up, get sponsorship like a yo-yo. Imagine the executives holding the yo-yo. Then you go down, you do the discovery, you understand their systems, their process, and then you pull it back up. And when you demo and when you propose, you're working with that senior executive. So they're holding the strings to the deal, but you're still actually going up and down the organization. But with their sponsorship, it's so much faster and so much easier. And that was a big shift I did too, is I started targeting executives when I, you know, when I was moving to an outward focus. It was like, who cares about the problems we solve? Who feels the pain? Those are the people you have to talk to, the ones who are actually measured on the results. And those are the executive team. So I started really just, it's hard because I love all people, but I'm not going to waste my time talking to the wrong people. I just don't do it.
You've got to be ruthless. Yeah, you've got to be ruthless.
I'm not going to spend three calls talking to a manager level at any capacity if I'm selling, or a director level for that matter. I'm going to talk to them once and I'm going to get their boss or their key executives involved quickly. And if they're not involved quickly, I'm moving on, because it doesn't make sense. Because I, like you, I've seen so many deals go nowhere because I gave the power to a champion who had no power. You can't give the power to someone who has no power.
And many people will, like you say, they'll overemphasize the decision-making power they've got internally as well. So you really need to cut through
that.
They
misrepresent.
We're speaking about.
They misrepresent.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Of course they do. People want you to think they're more important than they are. That's a very standard human nature. We like to rank our status higher than the true reality. You were speaking there about making changes within organizations, but I want to talk about a change within your lifestyle. At the age of 43, you retired from corporate sales. What were the drivers for that?
I think it was 41. I'm 44 now. So I left in, I guess, 2021. So 3 years ago. But I basically, well, a lot happened. So I'll give you kind of the personal changes I went through. So I had a lot of success in sales, but I, after making $1 million and, you know, buying this beautiful house and, you know, just to give you a little chronology, a little timeline. So I got into personal development January 2017. That's when I said no more. And I spent $20,000 on a coach. I went to a mastermind. I got deep into personal development, finished number one, made $1 million, did it the following year. And in December of 2018, so 2 years into this, like, we'll call it elite level success in sales, I got stuck upside down on a roller coaster for 30 minutes, hanging upside down. And my life literally flashed before my eyes. I thought I was going to die. It wasn't a normal coaster. It was a flying coaster. So the track is above your head and you have basically a single belt and you're hanging like this. I have pictures of it because it was on YouTube and people were filming. Because it was like, we were hanging upside down. I was 180 feet, 18 stories, hanging with just a little bar. And I thought the fucker was going to break. I thought because it stopped. It was like still. And I thought they were going to have to reset it. And what do the hanging roller coasters do? They go back up. And that would mean we were hanging upside down. So I'm hanging on for my life. And my life flashed before my eyes. I thought about my wife. I thought about my son. And I'm like, if I died right now in this moment, my life would have been a waste. And that was the most disheartening, difficult, humbling. And the reason I thought that was because I just came to this epiphany that I had been really self-centered and very selfish. And I made my life all about just making as much money as possible. And it was just God. I mean, I have a very, very strong faith. And I believe that was what I would call divine intervention. And it was a God moment. And I probably have 25 moments of these supernatural physical things happening on this world that just you can't explain. And this was one of them. This was one of the biggest ones. And
it was in his plan to deviate you from your existing
path.
It had
to happen. That's what I believe 100%. And so that day, and here's why I believe this so strongly, is that morning I'd been listening to a podcast, the Lewis Howes School of Greatness podcast. And there was a person called Bonnie Ware on there. And it was the 5 regrets of the dying. And she basically was a hospice nurse interviewing people about their regrets on their deathbeds. So I already was kind of thinking about regrets of the dying. Then I get stuck on a roller coaster and think I'm going to die. And then the same day when I finally got off, my dog dies out of the blue. So it's like that date, December 20th, 2018, was meant for me to like really get shooken up and change my path. And the realization I had up there, here's what happened. So I'm on the roller coaster and I'm like thinking my life is meaningless. If I died, it's like I wouldn't have made an impact on the world. I wouldn't have made a difference. And up there, I had a couple epiphanies. The first epiphany was that I had been very selfish and I hadn't used my gifts to actually help other people. That was the biggest one. The second was that I actually hadn't used God's given gifts that I had received to help or to benefit the world. It was like this realization that I had been blessed with a lot of gifts. And I say a lot of gifts. I was fortunate to be born with the mom that I had and the dad that I had, right? For better or worse. My dad struggled with a lifetime of addiction and died when I was only 20. And my mom was a professor at UCLA. And I had this contrast of two parts that kind of came and defined who I was, this hardworking addict, right? And it was like, that was a blessing, and it revealed itself later. But I had also been blessed with intelligence, and I'd been blessed with never caring what people thought. Since the time I was a kid, like, I walk like a duck, I'm flat-footed, and people would quack and make fun of me, and I just never cared. I just shake it off, laugh, and that helped me in sales. I just never really cared.
Of course, you weren't terrified of rejection or being made to look silly or like, somebody saying no.
I was blessed with this unbelievable confidence in my ability to just go out and make things happen and go for it and not really care what people think along the way. And most people don't have that. And I don't know, it was this deep kind of like, wow, holy shit, I've been given these gifts and I've been so fucking selfish about using them for my own betterment. And I just said no more. And in that moment, I started praying. I said, God, please get me down from this coaster. Not only didn't want to leave my young baby Max, who was 2 years old at the time, and my wife, I saw them in my head. I'm like, I have so much life left to live. I do. And I said, God, I promise I will start using my gifts to help other people. I promise. And then nothing happens. Okay. And I'm like, just get me off this roller coaster, God. I promise. If you get me off, I will start now. I won't wait anymore. And I kid you not, Colin, in that moment when I said, I'll start now, the roller coaster immediately took off. And I'm like, there is a God, and now I have to keep my word. And that has been my guiding principle for 7 years. And so I started this journey in 2019. I started a couple months later. I didn't really know what I was going to do or how I was going to serve, but I'm like, you know what? It doesn't need to be perfect. I'm going to do I started with not trying to monetize anything. I said, I just want to help people and fulfill my promise. So here's what I'm going to do. First I spoke at our SKO and I shared kind of my strategies and I helped train Salesforce people. So I did that immediately. That was like the kickoff was shortly thereafter. And I helped with that. And then I said, I'm going to start making videos on Instagram. For anyone listening, if you're curious, this was a project that I did in 2019. It's still on there. My reels, you'll see 300 plus videos. But I said, I'm going to make a video every single day, just a minute. And I'm going to give a tip of the day. I'm just going to give something people can do to better their lives, right? And I bought Gary Vee's book. And I'm like, I'll just start building a brand and start helping people. And I joined a group called Brand Builders on how to build a brand. But I didn't do it from this idea of like being a business owner. I did it from a place of wanting to help people. And I ended up doing that for a year, okay? And a lot happened in this year, but let's just say my addiction. So I was struggling. I wanted to help people and I started coaching. At first I started making videos and then a couple of people came to me and said, hey, can you coach me? I want to work with you. So I took on a couple of clients and then I started getting invited to do speaking engagements and speaking at Salesforce and other companies. And what ended up happening is like my ego just got out of control because now I had all this success in sales and now I was like doing a personal brand and getting all these followers and you know, it became this like, my ego got really big. Okay. And again, I'm going somewhere with this. So bear with me on this story. My intention was to help, but I still was broken inside. So I started coaching and making videos. And during the time I'm doing this, I have Salesforce. I have now this media thing that I'm doing with Instagram. And all the while I'm struggling with addiction. And specifically the addiction I was struggling with was sex addiction. Okay. So I was married and I had a 2-year-old and I would go into strip clubs and I would go look at porn and I would go on webcam sites while I was married, okay, and I can say this openly, publicly, because fortunately, I've been in recovery 4 years. I stopped watching porn 4 years ago. I'm approaching four years of recovery. But this was started in 2020. Meanwhile, 2019, none of this had happened yet. Nothing with addiction recovery. And I'm doing all this and I'm trying to make videos and coach people. And I have this double life. I have the secret that is, it's not, what?
That hits, that really hurts your authenticity, yeah. Because as you say, you are giving, and you've had this moment that's not forced you, but encouraged you to change path and start to give. And you're on that path, but you've not quite done the work yet to be the version of Ian that we get to speak to on a podcast in 2024, right. Because there were still things going on back there that you hadn't addressed. And until you did that, you couldn't bring this version that at the moment, like I watch you online, you're pretty unstoppable. Let's be honest. Like, look at what you've done. And we can talk about some of the revenue within Untap Your Sales Potential, mm-hmm. and the different people you've helped and the success stories. But that wouldn't probably be possible if you didn't do some of the work that tackled this other like nagging thing that was just holding you
back.
Now
we're getting to the good stuff. Now we're getting to the real thing. You're spot on, Colin. Like, this was my journey, and I thought my journey was help other people, but I hadn't helped myself yet. I actually hadn't gotten the help that I need. Would have been possible. It would have been impossible for me to be able to stand here saying, yes, I was a sex addict, admit I went to strip clubs, looked at webcams, cheated on my wife, for God's sakes. I did. And I didn't think it was cheating. That's the irony. Sex addicts don't think they're cheating because it's a transactional nature, but having some woman who's not your wife in a private room in a strip club, that's fucking cheating. Let's not kid ourselves, especially if it's in secret. If your wife's going to watch you and say, great, and be cool with it, all good. That's on you. I'm not here to judge, but my wife wasn't cool with that, and I did it in secret. So that was this double life that I was living. I would get drunk. I was on Adderall. I would go to strip clubs. I would gamble. I mean, I was just a fucking addict, and I was a very addict with a lot of money and a big ego, and it literally, God's got plans for you. So God wanted me to help people. God also wanted me to get humbled. So the 2019, I was doing these projects, and then my ego got so big. And there was a point in January of 2020, it was literally a month before I got in recovery, where I was on the fritz with my wife. And I started thinking, you know, maybe I shouldn't be with my wife. And maybe, you know, and meanwhile, I was the one who was doing all this shit that was out of integrity. But I started resenting my wife because she didn't have as much ambition as me. She didn't want to have a business, or she wanted to be a full-time mom. And all she wanted to do was have me around for my family. That's all she wanted. And yet, because I was traveling and I was this big speaker and now this great salesperson, I was like, I don't want this. And so God has a way of speaking to you and giving you what you need, even if it's not what you want. And what ended up happening is I went to a strip club. My wife, I remember, she was actually in Ireland or Scotland at the time. And when she would go away, I would act out. It's again, I hate sharing these things because it's painful to share. But I think I went to two or three strip clubs and a massage parlor in like 10 days when she was gone. And I literally drove to an SAA meeting, which stands for Sex Addicts Anonymous, while she was gone. And they said, Ian, you can't look at porn, you can't masturbate, you can't do any of that stuff if you're going to be in this program. I'm like, fuck that, I'm out.
I'm like, you weren't ready to be fixed yet.
I was not ready yet. I was not nearly ready to go on that journey. But I said, you know what? I'm not going to go to strip club. I'm not going to go to massage bar. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to do it on my own. I'm going to will my way out of this thing. And I stopped in July of 2019. I stopped, and I didn't stop looking at porn, and I didn't stop going on webcams. Okay. In fact, that increased because I wasn't doing stuff live. So I end up going to more, and I hope this is helping men out there who are listening to this, because this is a problem no one talks about. And I promise you, so many men struggle with porn addiction or cam addiction or dating app addiction, where they just hook up. It comes in many forms. Trust me. It's not like, oh, just because you don't go to the strip club, you don't have a problem. Okay. If you can't.
You're completely correct. I hosted a gentleman called Josh Shea, who speaks really well on this topic, a couple of years ago about porn addiction. And it's a slippery slope, because you're so clued up on dopamine. I've heard you speak about it before, but we always want to increase like the stimulus, mm-hmm. And that's when it starts to get really, truly out of hand with webcams soliciting.
That's right. It turns into a more interactive. So maybe if you go on a porn site once a week for 10 minutes, okay, you probably don't have a problem. But if it leads to webcams or it leads to wanting to hook up apps and you can't keep things and you're wanting to stop.
We're progressive beings. We spoke about that at the start when it comes to our goals. It's the same in our vices as well. Right. So that you're completely correct. It can run away.
Porn leads to webcams, leads to strip club, leads to massage parlors, leads to prostitutes. It's kind of like the flow. And if any of those things you're struggling with, you probably, again, you're human and you're a man and you're not alone. And I'll just tell you that, again, as someone as successful as what I've had, went through this journey. And so that was the journey I was on, hiding all this stuff while I was going through this desire to serve and coach. And I said, no more, I'm not going to do it. But I didn't face, I was still in denial. So I thought I'm healed because I'm not going to strip clubs anymore, but I was still looking at webcams. I was still looking at porn. And I finally, in February of 2020, I decided to confess to my wife. I said, Sandy, so my wife's Christian. She's very strong, devout faith. And she told me when we got married, Ian, strip clubs are cheating. I don't want you with some naked woman. That's not me. And I said to myself, she's crazy. This is what guys do. So I literally did it in secret during the whole term of our marriage. But now it had been 6 months and I had stopped. And so I said, honey, guess what? What, honey? What is it, Ian? And she said, and I said, I haven't gone to strip clubs in a long time. She's like, huh? I'm like, yeah, I know you thought I was cheating. I'm not doing it. And she's like, okay. Because a couple times during our marriage, I admitted to her I went to strip clubs and it really hurt her. So this was like the longest stint I had gone. And I said, but I am doing something else instead. See, my conscience had been, after a year of almost making these videos and coaching, it was like, I need to clear my conscience. I can't serve and give and help people if I'm living a lie. So I did it for selfish reasons. I wanted to clear my conscience with my wife. And I said, honey, there's this thing called webcams. It's like a virtual strip club, and women will strip, but it's not real. It's just, it's just a site. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, it's like a strip club, but it's called a chat room and women strip. And she's like, well, you don't go on those, do you? I'm like, yeah, I do sometimes. And I was pretty honest about it. And she's like, well, how often do you go in? I said, maybe every couple weeks or so. And she's like, well, that's horrible. Why would you do that? And she was getting upset, but she kind of like was processing it. She was taking it in. And I'm like, oh, I just want to see how you feel about it. I know you don't like strip clubs, but are you okay with this? And she's like, am I fucking okay? No, I'm not okay with you talking to some women who's not your wife getting naked on a camera or watching someone. Like, what do you mean am I okay? And I'm like, okay, well, I won't do it. That's fine. I just wanted to, feel you out. So I thought it was all good. And, okay, now I know I shouldn't do this because she's not cool with it. Well, that wasn't where it stopped. So later that day, I come in and it's the end of the day and she has all my credit card statements printed out. And she has all the times, because every time you go on a webcam, there's a charge, for the time you spend there. And it's like, I guess their site's called, I've never been on it, but like OnlyFans, where you could pay a subscription. So that type of thing, it was that type of thing, but it was a webcam site. And she's like, Ian, what the fuck is this? And she had all the, all the time circled.
I'm like, the receipts.
Yeah, she had the credit card. And I said, it wasn't that big of a deal, honey. It's every few weeks or whatever. She's like, this is a huge deal. And then she just starts crying like horribly. And I'm like, oh no. And then it got really dark. And so she collapsed. She collapsed to the floor and she started convulsing, shaking uncontrollably, just like going into this traumatic kind of like physiological shaking. And it was like, it was horrible. It was like my wife, who I loved, she's a dime. She's amazing. And the scary part was that she was pregnant. She was 4 months pregnant. And so I'm like, honey, it's okay. I'm so sorry. And I'm trying to comfort her. And then she's like, oh shit. I'm like, what? She's like, I think I'm going into labor. Like, she was hysterical. And then she starts having contractions. I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, I'm having contractions, Ian, we got to go to the doctor. And so we rush to the doctor. And the whole time, okay, on the ride to the doctor, I'm like, God, please don't take this baby. God, it's one thing if you think you're hurting yourself. It's another thing you think you're hurting your wife. But if you think you have murdered your unborn son, Let me tell you, that puts things into reality. I really didn't think I was hurting anyone. When I saw her in pain, I realized that I was deceiving myself. When I thought I was going to be responsible for the death of my unborn baby, that was like, I'm a murderer. And I said to God, I said, God, please do not take this baby. Do not, whatever you do, please just help my baby be alive. And she's having these contractions. So we get to the doctor. He puts on the ultrasound device. And it's like the longest 30 seconds of my life. I called my mom. I said, Mom, come here. We need you. I was frantic. I was hysterical. He puts on the ultrasound device and he says, after like 30 seconds, he looks up and he's like, Ian, there's a heartbeat. I'm like, oh, thank God. He's like, the baby's okay. I'm like, oh, thank God. I was so relieved. And I'm like, what is it? What is it? What's going on? He's like, Ian, these aren't labor contractions. These are stress contractions. What'd you do? Would you cheat on her? You got a girlfriend or something? Like, you know, something like that. I'm like, what, have you seen this before? He's like, all the time. Men behaving badly that cause their wife such distress that they send them to the hospital and nearly think they're going to lose the baby. This is the underbelly of the darkness that the world we're living in, and it affects a lot of married men, and they will sweep it under the rug. Maybe one time in Vegas or at a bachelor party, I did this thing, never admit it. At least I have the fucking courage to admit it. So that was the day I got into recovery. I thanked God. I said, God, thank you. Please, thank you. And my son, he's just the light of my life. My son, Luke, that was my start into recovery from sex addiction. And that has been now 4 years on February 13th. And everything changed after that. Everything changed. I took a step back from work. I took a step back from my coaching business. I focused everything on my family and my mental health, and really, at that point, I mean, it's been 4 years, but I started with porn. I threw out the Adderall and started learning how to focus better. And I haven't gotten drunk in 4 years. I still drink, but I don't get drunk. I'll have a glass of wine or whatever. It's just not, I stopped gambling. I stopped everything. It was like, I got in the recovery, worked the 12 steps, and it just, my marriage was saved. I confessed everything to my wife. I literally told her every single thing, the scariest things that I thought she might leave me for. I'm like, if she's going to be with me, she needs to know the truth, the whole truth. I went and took a polygraph and showed her I wasn't lying. I got therapy from a certified sex addiction therapist. And I spent at least that year, all of 2020, during COVID, mind you, working on myself and doing the real work that I had never done and starting to give myself grace and having a real marriage. And I'm telling you, that was what spawned my business, because once I've done that work, man, it wasn't about me. I didn't have secrets. I didn't have, like, you know, we're all human shit. We all struggle with a lot of stuff, but I'm not living a double life. I don't have secrets. I'm honest. And that's what I can feel proud of. And when you can go through something like that, like risk losing everything, go through recovery, confess, take a polygraph with a fucking 3 hours with a military dude freaking grinding me and trying to get me to, like, break. I mean, after that, running a marathon was easy. Starting a business was easy. Going, like, I'm telling you, like, that was the...
It gives you a perspective. It really does. And thank you for sharing that, Ian. I appreciate some of that. It's extremely personal, but it paints and helps people to understand where you were and what needed to happen to move forward in the way that you've done. Because what you've achieved with your business and your life is extraordinary levels of success. But you were actually, like, using a golfing term, you were playing with a handicap. You were being restricted in some shape or form, like one hand tied behind your back to some extent. And now that that's gone, you can see what it's unlocked in your ability to help people. You have a huge cohort of people that you support in terms of your coaching, and how quickly your coaching has been a success is also something that I'm extremely interested in people understanding. Yeah. And I've actually heard you say before that you focus more on marketing than sales. And when you consider that you are somebody that's a brilliant salesperson, I think some people will find that surprising.
Yeah. If you're a great marketer, you don't have to have a great salesperson. I focus on marketing and I focus on product. And I focus on client success. Those are the things that I'm really focused on. If you do those three things really well, your people will come to you, right? So we can break it down. But I want to close the loop on the recovery. So to your point, what I teach now, right, is not sales training, right? It's mindset, habits, and selling skills. It is all about becoming a person. We talk about the first question, pursuit of your full potential. If I can literally turn from crazy addict, wild highs, sex addict, alcoholic, right? You name it. I mean, when I was 25, I crashed my ass into a tree head first, pissed drunk, 50 miles an hour, should have been dead. I was living such a crazy life, majority of life. And if I can turn myself around and quit all of these vices and be able to face, you know, my ultimate demons, that is stuff that everyone needs. So I teach people how to overcome addictions. And that's a big thing that people come to me in secret. Yeah, they're successful in sales, but they're really hiding something and we can work on it together. Or I teach them habits. How do you focus and achieve this level of success without Adderall? I have a ton of people who have ADHD who come to me and say, I need help. Because if an ADHD person can learn to get off medicine and build a business, hell, what are they doing? So it's like this, that unlocked everything that I coach. And that was the secret to my coaching business taking off, is because I actually did the work that I teach people to do now. And I still do it every single day. Every single day, I'm still doing the work that I'm teaching because I need to practice what I preach. So I think, again, when we talk about the business, there's sales training and there's sales coaching, but there's nobody that I'm aware of that coaches the combination of what I coach on, which is habits and time management, mindset, which is a lot of stoicism and philosophy and, you know, looking at the opportunity and the problems as gifts and blessings, and everything that happens to you is happening for you. And then there's the strategic selling skills, how to go from transactional. So that combination, everyone signs up for a different reason, right? And that's the cool thing, is like, it's not a one size fits all. Whereas most coaching is like, this is what I do. I'm a mindset coach, or I'm doing prospecting coaching, or I'm doing, like, that background is only possible through my life experiences and through the—
Correct. That's it. It's only possible with your unique take. So building your business has only been possible with your own unique life experiences, right? Perspective, the sources that you've consumed, the actions that you've taken are only really possible off the back of that as well. One of the things that you talk about, obviously, of course, is habits. And one of the books that I know that you were really inspired by was, let me find, what was the one you took down? Was it the Miracle Morning that was really pivotal in some of the way that you live your life?
There's a lot of habits books that I have. Actually, the Miracle Morning is great. Hal Elrod, and I do a lot of morning routines, and there's certain things I do to optimize my energy. But I'd say the number one book that really— there's two books that inspired me. One is Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, right? The second, which I love, and I'd highly recommend this for anyone, is what's called High Performance Habits by a guy named Brendon Burchard. Okay, and Brendon Burchard is unique. He's an extremely successful entrepreneur. Extremely. The guy has an incredible story, and he's been on all the podcasts, Ed Milet, Lewis Howes, you name it. He's coaching people like Ed Milet. He's coaching the elite people. He coaches the Oprah Winfrey Network. So he has billionaires that he coaches. He's kind of like a Tony Robbins, but more focused on habits versus just, you know, unleashing your potential like Tony Robbins. But he's up there. And Brendon Burchard wrote a book called High Performance Habits. And the reason this book makes such an impact is he has a different definition of success that I align with very well based on my own life experiences, which is success is performing consistently in over a sustained period of time without sacrificing your health or relationships in the process. So there's a lot of people that are successful. You look at Elon Musk or Larry Ellison or, you know, Bill Gates. Yeah, great billionaires, great products, but divorced, right? Cheaters, right? Things that, you know, you can read about and see. And, you know, there's the personal life has fallen flat, right? Jordan Belfort, right? So yeah, he's thrown in jail, divorced three times. Like, it's fine. They're good in one area, but that is not what success is by Brendon Burchard's definition. If you sacrifice your relationship or your health or your integrity in the process, then is it really success? My philosophy is, can you be wildly successful and maintain your health and your marriage and do all these things without managing your time still efficiently, where you can be the best parent or coach your soccer or do all these other things? So that's kind of been my goal, is how do you massively succeed while being available for your family? And
I'm so on board.
Yeah. So
that's the true definition of success. You're completely right. And some of the really like high performance, successful people you named there, people sometimes look at their life in envy, but you need to understand that you can't just have the parts of their life that you want. So Elon Musk was recently on Lex Friedman's podcast, and he was like, I don't think a lot of people would want to be inside my head. But somebody would be like, oh, but I'd love to own Tesla or be somebody that sends something to Mars. Okay, cool. But you actually have to have the cow bones and all. So if you take on Elon Musk's ability to maybe fly a spaceship to Mars and land it on it or whatever else he's going to achieve in this life and become like a legend in history, you also have to beat Elon at night in bed, can't sleep, can't stop thinking, hates it, has so much pain.
And again, I'm all for it. I know this might sound judgmental. It's not. It's great. Elon Musk is doing amazing things to advance civilization. So is Bill Gates. So is Jeff Bezos. So is Larry Ellison. But if you look again at the personal lives and the marriages, right, there's a success
the trade-off.
Or not, right? If you're divorced, your marriage wasn't successful. So again, my thing is like, my marriage and my parenting and my mental health and my integrity are first, and my faith are first. And then my business comes after that. And that's an outcome of making those other things right. So Brendan Burchard, his book, High Performance Habits, is only looking at the habits of people that have that success without compromising health and relationships. So that for me, and he looks at like 6 degrees of, you know, 6 of the core habits and all the tactics behind that. And there's workbooks. And I think that for me has really helped me with, you know, in fact, I was so bullish on it that he runs the High Performance Coaching Institute. I was thinking about getting certified as a high performance coach, but I'm like, no, you know what? I'd rather have my own unique certification of my own coaching, which now I've put in place so I can hire other coaches and certify them, but versus being his, you know, following his methodology. But it really, that lands with me more than anything else that I've seen is like what really makes a high performer. And he outlines it in brilliant detail. And it's a combination of your health, your routines, your clarity, your productivity, your influence, there's a few different habits. There's 6 of them, but I think that's been one of my all-time favorite books.
One of my last questions for you then, Ian, would be, if we were to think about before you hit your 50th birthday, a big milestone for many people, what would success look like for you?
I can stay longer if you want to. I blocked a little extra time to kind of go through the business side if you want to learn about the coaching business and how that scaled, but that's up to you. But for me, by the time I hit 50, that's a great question. What I want to be able to do by the time I'm 50, so my business right now is doing, we did 2.5 million last year in our second year. And again, for coaching, that is pretty big because I was a solopreneur and it's not 2.5 million income, it's revenue. So that puts us in fundamentally a unique position where we are an Inc. 5,000 company, right? But for me, that's not the goal. The goal is to be able to take what I've learned and share it and extend it and make this accessible to as many people as possible. So I'm thinking about, how do I scale and grow this business? So now I'm hiring a head of customer success. I have a coach that I brought on, my first coach. I have a video team. I have a lot of resources now to really build this into a very, very scalable business. So what I would like to be by the time I'm 50, one is I want the business to be at a place where I could sell it because it's not dependent on me. That's for me what the North Star is bringing and building a community where I can bring other people that can lead and coach and facilitate and build something that's not solely dependent on Ian to deliver, right, all the services. And that's really exciting for me is the process of like building and so building the peer-to-peer community and helping people learn from each other, bringing in other coaches and speakers, being able to have content and course creators. Like this vision of what I'm doing with Untap Your Sales Potential now got way bigger than me. And it's beautiful. It's something I can really get behind. So by the time I'm 50, I want to be able to have this in a position where at least, I mean, it's going to be doing at least 5 million, probably closer to 10 million per year. Where the rate we're on right now, I think that's very feasible. But more importantly, I want it to be in a place where it's self-running, where if I want to be able to, you know, to sell it, I can. If I probably won't, because I will love it and I'll be super attached to where it is at that point in time. Because ultimately, I don't want to just coach salespeople. I want to coach everybody because the shit that I've been through, what I teach is ubiquitous. It's not just unique to salespeople. So I think
it's broader.
I think that's one thing. The second thing is I want to be able to have time back. The reason I want it self-sufficient is I want to be able, and we can timestamp this, Colin, and we'll see where I am at 50. You know, hopefully, God willing, I'll be healthy and things will be going well. But I want to be able to step back where my time is not, you know, 10 hours, 9 hours just in the business. So if I get it to the point where I have the right team, the right people, the right program, consistent revenue, people renewing, I can do that. And then I see myself like writing a book, really, again, doing things from not from a place of needing money, but doing something from a place of purely choosing what I want to do and doing it from a place of service. So having a podcast, writing a book, being able to run triathlons or Ironmans, like spending my time exactly where I want to spend it. And right now, where I want to spend it is building up on top of your sales potential, but it is a lot of work. It is time consuming. It doesn't necessarily have the full freedom and lifestyle that I think when it gets to a certain place, it will have, but I'm also enjoying it very much. So I don't mind, but I could see myself wanting to travel more with my wife and, you know, speak more and do projects that right now are just not, they're not my highest priority. So I say no to them, like writing a book, for example. Writing a book, I'm saying no to because it would take a ton of time. And fundamentally, it's not going to
keep the goal to goal, keep the goal to goal and keep going, because it's providing something I speak about quite a lot on the podcast in recent times has been the four currencies: money, freedom of time, freedom of location, satisfaction and purpose. At the moment, you're fulfilling the money element. You're not fulfilling the freedom of time element because there is a time element. You're not fulfilling necessarily freedom of location, albeit you could probably travel and host things online. But the satisfaction is really high too. These things are all going to come.
Freedom of location is because I can work, like we bought a house in Lake Arrowhead. I can go work my stuff online. I got out of traveling and giving live seminars. What I did is I bought this Lake Arrowhead. So all of my gold clients now come to me and we'll have retreats and live events. And
amazing.
Cold plunges, they're coming to me in Lake Arrowhead. So I'm not needing to go anywhere. I purposely don't do keynotes or live trainings. It's a very, very small percentage of my business because.
So based on that currency model though, Ian, you're in a great spot. We just got to keep going and building. And it's very fulfilling because it's helping you and it's something you care about and it's helping others as well, which that roller coaster moment sharply brought that into focus that you need to give back and share some of these skills and these mindsets that you've got. And of course, it's your right to earn the fiscal return from that and provide for your family and the generations that come after. So I think that's a beautiful combination.
Yeah, it's interesting because like we talk about money and the money comes as an outcome of doing everything that we're talking about right now. It really does. But I do have a goal in my mind where I fundamentally think if I have that number, I don't need to be working anymore. Right now, I still feel like I need to work because my lifestyle is doing the math. It's like my costs right now are $75,000 a month, right? And that's not just personal lifestyle. That's people, that's payroll, there's other things. But like, I need to make sure that my business is flowing for that. But it's all building equity. And it's this thing that like, I don't know how I'm going to feel at 50. I'm not even worried about that. All I know is what's in front of me right now. But I do have this genuine belief that there's a much bigger purpose for me outside of untap your sales potential to make a bigger impact on the world. And I just know that the problems that I've had to solve in my own life, and what I really see again, Colin, is like, how can I help men who are struggling with their marriages? How can I help? Because everything that I thought I wanted was already in front of me with my wife and my children. And there's this beauty in like thinking you want more, you're chasing, you're only going to be happy if you get this. And yet my happiness is right there. It's right there in that house with my wife and my children. And it's right there within me in this pursuit of facing my demons. And I know that the world needs this and it needs it more than ever. The more disconnected we are, the more isolated we are. So I think of like untap your sales potential as this like craft and building a business to get me to a place where I can.
It's a vehicle.
I can see it. And then I could do whatever I want without even needing to think about money, where I can just go really take a stand. And I do some of this right now by talking about podcasts and being open about my journey, and it makes a difference. It really does. But I know the world needs so a champion for integrity and faith and living a life of truth versus the distractions and dopamine and all the addictions and vices that everyone struggles with, and especially men. And that's really where I feel a lot of passion and energy, because I live it every day. I still have that desire, but I have the tools now to be able to refrain. And it's been amazing. I mean, it really has been amazing. I learned about this, like, again, not to get too personal, but like, I learned about this movement called NoFap. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, right? But it's basically men who don't masturbate, which is like, what? Right? I wouldn't have thought that, but it's been for me over 90 days. I said, I'm done. I don't need to do this, because I associate that with porn. And I had a few slips, you know, and I'm like, I don't want to have any more slips. And God, by God's grace, I mean, it's been over 90 days and I have no desire. And so again, it's just been this journey of one thing after another and setting the bar higher and higher. Now I'm training, I'm looking a lot of David Goggins stuff, where my goal this year in 2024 at 44 years old is to do 20 pull-ups in a row, 20 explosive pull-ups or push-ups, a 4-minute plank, and a touch my toes. So I'm like this continual like redefining of what's possible and changing the landscape, redefine what's possible in your personal life, redefine what's possible in sales, redefine what's possible in business and in marriage. Like, that's what I fucking love, is like,
you're on an exciting path, and I can feel it. And I think, as you're saying, there's going to be so many different avenues that are going to open up to you in the future based on the journey that you're on right now and the boxes that you're ticking off. And let's be honest, you and I are 100% going to have a round two at some point where we can go deeper on this as well. And I've really enjoyed the chat that we've had just now. If the listeners want to continue the conversation, Ian, where should they head towards to connect with you?
So two places. One is LinkedIn. That's where I live. I post there every day. I'm not really, if you want to see pictures of my family, you go on Instagram. LinkedIn is all business. Secondly, YouTube, just YouTube, Ian Koniak. If you got value from this show, please subscribe. I am trying to grow my YouTube channel. I'm putting a lot of quality content out there in sales, mostly in mindset and habits. So that's the second place. And if you're really curious about like the sales piece or the business piece, and you want to get a deep dive on what it takes to become a earner in that 500 to a million category in sales, I put out a free training recently. It's untapyoursalespotential.com/training. It's a training called How to Make $500K to $1 million in Sales. It's about an hour and a half long. It's everything I know poured into that. So that's completely free. You can check that out as well.
Beautifully. And all three of those will be linked in the show notes. Thank you to you, Ian. And thank you to you, the listener. I'll be back to speak to you guys again very, very soon.
Thanks, Colin.